Okay, so what we are doing is as follows. Let me just try to get. No, that's wrong. We're not doing Duolingo. Can you see the Gemara? Can everyone see the Gemara? Okay, Duolingo Yiddish is important, but what we're doing now is Gemara. I happen to be up to level 4 for those of you who
But
are.
can we add you? Can I add you on Duolingo?
Yeah, sure.
What's your username?
I think I'm Rabbi Ezra Schwartz.
Okay, I'll see. I don't remember what mine is, but I try to keep up the habit. But I've tried like different languages. I've done the most on Hebrew, but yeah, I broke my streak.
I'm doing Yiddish now. One of my
Yeah, I
daughters.
started Yiddish because they, yeah, my username is just, okay, Caroline Morgan.
I started Yiddish. My daughter Rina is doing Spanish. My son Yosef Gov is doing Hebrew. So we got the whole family into Duolingo. This was not an advertisement that was intended. Let's try to learn. We finished the first parak of Sukkah right before Pesach. We made a siyum on Tainis Bechorim. Let's begin the second parak of Maseches Sukkah. Thank you. If you remember, the first parak of Maseches Sukkah involved the halachos of constructing a sukkah. Right? That was the topic of the first parak in Sukkah. The second parak of Sukkah is going to discuss halachos of sitting in the sukkah, but the halachos of sitting in the sukkah are obviously related to halachos of constructing a sukkah. These two dinim are connected, and this comes up here in the first Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, "Hayoshein tachas hamita b'sukkah lo yotze yidei chovaso." If a person sleeps under the bed in the sukkah, the person does not fulfill their obligation. When you're under the bed in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, because apparently, right? And Rashi seems to say it this way, Zakt Rashi, if you sit under a bed in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah. De ohel mafsik beino l'sukkah. Rashi says that I have a tent, an ohel, a barrier between me and the sukkah. And that's why I don't get the mitzvah, because I'm underneath the bed. I'm not inside the sukkah. That's Rashi's comment. The Rif has a different comment. The Rif tells us that the reason why, if I sleep under the bed in the sukkah, the reason I don't get the mitzvah is because it is the same halacha as a sukkah under a sukkah. If you remember, we had a whole lengthy discussion back on Tesa Mabez going over to Yud about if you have one sukkah on top of the other sukkah. So if you're in the upper sukkah, the top sukkah, you fulfill the mitzvah. If you're in the lower sukkah, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. Zuck the riff that if I'm under the bed in the sukkah, it's like a kol shekein that I don't fulfill the mitzvah. Even if I'm in a sukkah inside a sukkah, if I'm in the lower sukkah, I don't get the mitzvah. Certainly, if I'm in a bed under the sukkah, I don't get the mitzvah. That's what the riff says. So Rashi says it's because I'm in a tent, which is mafsik between me and the sukkah. And the Rif gives a different reason. The Rif says it's not because of the tent, it's because it is like a sukkah inside a sukkah. It's worth noting that the Mishnah Brura at the beginning of Siman Tav Resh Chaf Zayin, the Mishnah Brura quotes that the machlokas between Rashi and the Rif is a machlokas as to the level of the concern. Meaning, according to Rashi, that I am in an ohel under the sukkah, I'm in a tent inside the sukkah. If we're honest, it's not really a tent. You see, the halacha of tents can be a tent of one tefach, is also considered a tent for purposes of tumah, Right? We encountered that in the Gemara earlier. If you have like one tefach, one hand breath, and there's one hand breath, and there's a dead body over here, and you're underneath the same thing, that's also an ohel. This halacha is not true with one tefach. Right? The halacha requires more. So obviously, the din isn't really a din that an ohel, if I'm in a tent inside a sukkah, right? The din is obviously not that I'm not going to fulfill the mitzvah completely. Let me give another example. There's a discussion in the poskim about if you wear a very broad brimmed hat, a sombrero, no? If you wear like a Mexican sombrero. So according to some, that type of hat might have the status of an ohel. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, in Simon Shin Aleph, in Hilchos Shabbos. It could be you're not allowed to wear such a wide-brimmed hat if it's there to prevent sunlight because it's an ohel. Is anyone going to say that you're not allowed to sit in the sukkah with a wide-brimmed hat? Have you ever heard this? It would be like a wild and crazy chumrah, no? So obviously the concern is we're not really worried that it's an ohel. But the way the Mishnah Berurah understands it, Mishnah Berurah says that when Rashi says that there's an ohel mafsik, Rashi does not mean that this is true on the level of Doraisa. What Rashi means is that on the level of Derabbanan, rabbinically speaking, we treat it like you're inside a different tent. But min ha-Torah, I'm in the sukkah. I'm in the airspace of the sukkah. There's sukkah all around me. I'm surrounded by the kedusha. Yeah, I'm under the bed, but I'm still in the sukkah. Min ha-Torah, I'm still yotzei. Only midrabbanan am I not yotzei. That's what Rashi holds. However, the Mishnah Berurah comments that according to the Rif's understanding, that if I sit under the bed in the sukkah, it is the functional equivalent of being in a sukkah, tachas a sukkah, in being in one sukkah that is underneath another sukkah. Well, if that's the case, sukkah tachas a sukkah, the Gemara learns from a pasuk, vasukos teshvu, vasukos, even though it sounds plural, it's written without, it's written in the deficient way. So therefore, you do not get the mitzvah even on the level of Doraisa. So this is a fundamental machlokas on the way the Mishnah Berurah sets it up. There's a fundamental machlokas over here as to whether someone who sits underneath the bed in the sukkah, you sleep under the bed in the sukkah, do you not get the mitzvah on the level of Doraisa? Do you not get the mitzvah on the level of Drabbanan? And this, of course, is relevant. Let's say there's no place to sleep in the sukkah. The only place that you have location in the sukkah is under the bed. Is it better than nothing? Right? That's really the question over here. The way the Mishnah Berurah sets it up is that according to Rashi, ohel mafsik is a din derabbanan. Now, the Prima Gadim does not like this idea at all. The Prima Gadim says, even according to Rashi, that says ohel mafsik, of course, it's a din deraisa. Ohel mafsik means you're in a different tent. You're not in a sukkah. A sukkah means that there's schach on top of you. There's no schach on top of you now. There are bedboards on top of you. If there are bedboards on top of you, you're not in the sukkah. The Prima Gadim understands that even according to Rashi, it's a din doraisa. But be it as it may, we read the first line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says a person who sleeps under the bed in the sukkah does not fulfill the mitzvah. Let's just continue reading this first Rashi. This first Rashi is like full of gold. Hayoshein lo yotza, right? Rashi writes, you don't get the mitzvah. Zot Rashi, de ohel mafsik beino lasukah, because there is a tent that interferes between that individual and the sukkah. The ikar yeshivas hasukah, and the main purpose of yeshivas hasukah is achila shtia. Vishena. The main purpose of the sukkah is eating, drinking, and sleeping. Ladies and gentlemen, what's the problem with this Rashi? The main part of the sukkah, the main mitzvah of the sukkah is eating, drinking, and sleeping. Dun, dun, dun. So I'll tell you the problem. Everyone is very shy. The halacha is you have to eat in the sukkah, no? I'm not allowed to eat outside of the sukkah if I'm eating a full meal of like bread, etc. I'm allowed to have a snack outside of the sukkah, but eating probably means a real meal. Got it. Sleeping, I'm not allowed to sleep outside the sukkah, according to the technical halacha. Even shina sarai, even taking a nap, you're not allowed to do outside of the sukkah. So eating, sleeping has to be in the sukkah. What about drinking? Do you have to drink in the sukkah? So as a matter of halacha, absolutely not, no? When I drink, if I need to take a Coke, I'm on a Cholom Moed trip. I recommend it on Twitter this week to all of my Twitter followers, like all 20 of them, that it's a good idea to save your potato starch kashrut Pesach cakes, because on Cholom Moed Sukkot, that way you won't need a sukkah, because you only need a sukkah if it's like mizonos food, etc. Your potato starch cakes will not be any worse in 6 months than they are right now, and therefore you can take them on your Cholom Moed trip on Sukkot. You don't need a sukkah for eating food that, unless it's bread or mizonos, more than a kibetza. You don't need a sukkah for drinking. As a matter of technical halacha, you don't even need a sukkah for drinking wine. No? You don't need a sukkah to drink wine. You only need a sukkah for bread. This past Sukkot, I was stuck in quarantine. One of my kids had COVID. Kid came down with COVID right before Yom Kippur. Another kid came down with COVID between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. I was stuck in quarantine on Sukkot. What Rav Schechter told me to do is to go out to eat in the sukkah at 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, when no one would be around. Nick opened the Mount Sinai sukkah for me, 11:30 at night. I went in and into the sukkah and I had my meal. The problem was, you can get hungry between like 6 p.m. and 11:30, between when Yom Tov begins. And so what did I do? So I made Kiddush at home. You're allowed to have wine outside the sukkah. I made Kiddush at home. I had some chicken, I had some food, all foods I could eat outside of the sukkah. 11:30 at night, I went into the sukkah. I had hamotzi, etc. I got my mitzvah of Sudas Yontif. You're allowed to eat outside of the sukkah if it's not bread. You're allowed to drink outside the sukkah even if it's wine. There's a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch about making havdalah outside of the sukkah. Technically speaking, it's permitted. You're allowed to drink wine outside of the sukkah. So if that's the case, this Rashi is very difficult, no? Rashi seems to be saying that you're not allowed to drink outside the sukkah. So I can't drink under the bed because the sukkah is achila shtia v'shena, eating, drinking, and sleeping. So that Rashi is quite difficult. So I saw Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his notes thinks that this Rashi is a proof to one of the biggest chedushim in the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura usually quotes straight halacha. Occasionally he throws in his own original ideas. So the Mishnah Brura has in his original idea. He says, you know, throughout the Masechta and a number of places, we see that you're supposed to eat and drink in the sukkah. It's not true. You don't have to drink in the sukkah. So Mishnah Berurah has a chiddush. He says, if I'm in the middle of a meal that has bread, if I'm in the middle of a full-fledged halachic meal with bread, then I'm not allowed to drink outside of the sukkah. I'm not even allowed to drink water, he suggests, outside of the sukkah if it's in the middle of a meal. That's a very big chumrah, no? You're sitting in the sukkah. You go into the house to take out some food or whatever. You can't take a drink of Coke or schnapps when you're in the house. Because in middle of the meal, the chiyuv of sukkah applies even to drinks. That's what the Mishnah Berurah tells us in Siman Tav Resh Lamed Tes. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't really bring evidence to this psak. He just says, that's the language of the Gemara, achil shtiyah, etc. Right? Reb Shlomo Zalman says, oh, it could be that this Rashi is saying the same idea. Again, it's not more of a proof than the Gemara is, but maybe the reason why Rashi says drinking also is because Rashi is teaching us the same novel idea that the Mishnah Berurah taught us as well. Okay, so that's the first halacha that we learned. If you sleep under the bed in the sukkah, you don't get your mitzvah, right? For one of two reasons, either because you're in a different tent or because it's like a sukkah under a sukkah, and we analyze that a bit. And we also analyze the comment of Rashi, that Rashi says that the mitzvah of sukkah is eating and drinking. And the reason why Rashi added drinking, he suggested, is because drinking in the context of a meal also requires a sukkah. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Second line in the Mishnah. Amar Reb Yehuda. Nohagin haginu shayinu yishenim tachas hamita b'fnei hazakenim v'lo amru lanu davar. Reb Yehuda says, we did it! Right? We used to sleep under the sukkah. We slept under the bed in the sukkah. There were zakenim around, there are elders around, and no one said anything to us. So you see that you get the mitzvah even if you're under the bed in the sukkah. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rashi comments, foreshadowing what the Gemara is going to say, that Rabbi Yehuda is consistent based on the position that he held in the entire first parak. Again, like we began, the first parak is about building the sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda teaches us that building the sukkah has to be a diras keva. That's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The sukkah has to be a substantial structure, has to be a diras keva. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? A diras arai, a temporary, insignificant structure, can't invalidate the more significant diras keva. The bed that you are under is by definition a less significant structure than the sukkah that you're in. After all, the sukkah is diras keva, says Rabbi Yehuda. And the bed, which is diras arai, cannot invalidate the sukkah that is considered diras keva. That's his chiddush. That's his position. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, what we did when we were younger, in our youth, is we slept under the bed in the sukkah. No one said anything. And the reason why is because Rabbi Yehuda, consistent with his opinion, says that, okay, diras arai does not invalidate diras keva. The Mishnah continues. Omar Rabbi Shimon. Maisa betevi avdo sharaban gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel had a very famous slave. His name was Tevi. And once upon a time, Tevi, the slave of Rabbi Gamliel, slept underneath the bed of the sukkah. Rabbi Gamliel tells the elders, Re'isem Tevi Avdi, Shu Talmud Chochem, V'yodea sh'avodem peturim min hasuka, lefikach yoshein hu tachas hamita. Rabbi Gamliel is like shepping nachas, right? He is saying, wow, my Eved Tevi, what a Talmud Chacham, right? Such a knowledgeable fellow. Tevi knows that avodim, that slaves, are exempt from sleeping in the sukkah, are exempt from eating in the sukkah. And because Tevi knows that slaves, that, by the way, when I speak about slave, I'm talking about an Eved Kenani, a non-Jewish slave who's purchased by a Jew. The halacha is that when a non-Jewish slave is purchased by a Jew, you have to take that non-Jewish slave and immerse the non-Jewish slave in the mikvah. That's called Tevila Rishona. So when I speak about Eved, an Eved Kenani, that Eved Kenani is somewhat Jewish. The Eved Kenani was already immersed in the mikvah. That is called Tevila Rishona. Later on, the Eved can go free and will undergo a second Tevila and become a full-fledged Jew. But at this moment, the Eved Kenani, after that first Tevila, before the second Tevila, at that moment, the Eved Kenani is not yet fully Jewish, or we'll have to define it a little more precisely in a couple of minutes. But the Eved Kenani is exempt from sitting in a sukkah. And Rabbi Gamliel is so much shepping naches. He's so proud. He's like, you saw my slave, Tevi? He knows that Avodim are exempt from a sukkah. That's why he sleeps under the bed. The Mishnah continues and the Mishnah concludes, Ulefi darkeinu lamanu. Based on this, we learn, Shahayoshin tachas hamita, lo yotzi yideicho vasal. Based on this, we learned that when you sleep under the bed in the sukkah, you don't fulfill your mitzvah. Meaning, Rabban Gamliel never made a statement that halachically, if you sleep under the bed in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah. He never said that. What he said was, oh, my servant Tevi is azat ha-mitchachim. He sleeps under the table in the sukkah because he knows avodim are exempt from the sukkah. From that statement, we learned that from that statement we learned that if you sleep under the table in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah. This is an idea, Rashi comments. This is an idea, kilomar, right? The Rashi, two lines before the lines get wide. Kilomar, afa pishlo amar lanu, l'shem limud. He didn't tell us to teach us a halacha. Elo l'sicha skulam ba'alma. He's just chatting. He's just making a statement. Shoyim mishtabech ba'avdo l'bad yichusa ba'alma. Rashi is an interesting comment, that he was praising his slave as Badichusa Ba'alma. In other words, it's not that Rabban Gamliel is really saying that his servant Tevi is such a Talmud Chacham. It was Badichusa Ba'alma. It was kind of just a way of joking around, making light. Since it's Badichusa Ba'alma, he was making light, but still, we could learn a halacha from it. There's an idea that sichas chulin shel talmidei chachamim tzrichen limud. You could learn a lot just from the banter, just from the ordinary talk of talmidei chachamim. Rabbi Gamliel, in his joking sort of way, he's like, "Ah, my servant Tevi, he's such a talmud chacham." But even from that, we're able to infer the halacha that if you're under the table in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah. So far, so good? Now, how much of your body has to be in the sukkah? To fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, how much of my body has to be in the sukkah? So the halacha is that most of your body has to be in the sukkah to fulfill the mitzvah. So much so that there's a comment that many have called, the poskim speak about rosho verubo. To be in the sukkah, you need your head and the majority of your body inside the sukkah. Your head and the majority of your body. Well, here's the problem. Is that a din l'chatchila? That my head and the majority of the body is good? Or is it that l'chatchila, I should have my entire body in the sukkah? If I'd be sitting in the sukkah and my feet are like sticking outside, but my torso and my head is inside the sukkah, do I fulfill the mitzvah in the ideal way? Or am I fulfilling the mitzvah only in a b'diyeved sort of way? So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, take a look at the way people sit in the sukkah. You have a table, correct? Most of us have a table in the sukkah? I'll say it's correct. Your feet are under the table? Right? Your feet, your legs and your feet could end up taking up a very considerable part of your body, no? Let's say I happen to be 5'9". I didn't measure. But how tall am I from my feet until my belt? My guess is it could be like I'm around 3 feet tall, no? Between my feet and my belt, maybe even a little bit more. There's a bit of a problem. Am I really going to get the mitzvah of sukkah? Especially if you're in a tight, squished-in sukkah, that you don't have much room, so you can end up sitting right next to the table. So it could be that a very significant amount of your body is under the table. It could be that you don't fulfill the mitzvah in the ideal way because it is not rosho verubo, and because your entire body is not in the sukkah. It's entirely possible also, Reb Shlomo Zalman notes, that even rosho verubo, even the majority of your body isn't in the sukkah. Let's go slowly. When I talk about rosho verubo, when I talk about that to be in the sukkah, I need my head and the majority of my body. What does that mean? Does that mean I need the majority of my body and the entire head? Or do I mean the majority of my head and the body? Okay, let's say your head is, I don't know, how tall is my head? Let's say it's 12 inches, no? So that means the rest of my body without my head is 4'9". So if I have like 2.5 feet under the table, so then there's another 12 inches, that's 3.5 feet with my head, right? And then the rest of my body is going to be 2 feet and 4 inches. 2 feet and, I totally lost track of the math. But the question is, if rosho verubo, if the halacha requires that the majority of your body plus the head has to be in the sukkah, so it's very possible that you're not going to have that. If you hold that all you need is the majority of your body, including your head, so then it could be you have it. But if you hold that the head is separate from the majority of the body, so then it's possible that if you're sitting under the table, it could be you don't fulfill the mitzvah. That's a wild chumrah, no? That you have to sit back in the sukkah. You have to eat, right? Almost like Pesach. You have to eat like not near the table. You're leaning or whatever it is. Because you need the majority of the body and the head in the sukkah. Am I being clear with the math over here? Is this? It's an interesting idea that we never thought of. Like once the halacha tells me that when I have to be in the sukkah, if I'm under the table, I'm not in the sukkah. So then we have a question about, well, aren't we all under the table to some extent because our legs are under the table? Then we have to figure out whether the majority of my body is in the sukkah. But one thing I see for sure is the fact that we all sit in the sukkah like this. That indicates that you do not need, that indicates that lechatchila, that there is no ideal of having the entire body in the sukkah. The fact that the entire Jewish people sit with their feet under the table indicates that rosho verubo, that the majority is considered a din lechatchila and you fulfill the mitzvah that way. That's what seems to emerge. Okay, so this is the first conversation that we had in the Mishnah. Let's just read the first three lines of the Gemara, and then I want to come back and learn some Taisus. Zakli Gemara, Vaha leka asara. The Gemara asks a question: how is it that you don't fulfill the mitzvah when you're sitting in the sukkah or when you're sleeping under the bed in the sukkah? How do you not get the mitzvah? It's not 10 tefachim tall. So Tirgim Shmuel b'mita asara. Shmuel says that when we say that if you sleep under the bed in the sukkah, you don't get the mitzvah, it has to be that the bed is 10 tefachim tall. This Shmuel, Taisus comments, is consistent with his position back on Daf Yud. If you remember in Daf Yud, we learned that one sukkah under another sukkah is no good. But there is a discussion, at what point do I assume that it's a sukkah under a sukkah? And at what point do I say it's just like very thick schach? So one opinion is if there's a distance of one tefach, that makes it a sukkah under another sukkah. The other opinion is that if there's space of four tefachim, that makes it sukkah under a sukkah. The third opinion is that if there's space of 10 tefachim, then it's sukkah under a sukkah. Shmuel is the authority who says 10 tefachim. That's Shmuel. So consistently over here, Shmuel says, in order to be a problem, it has to be that the table you're under is 10 tefachim. This Gemara, by the way, this line in the Gemara would sound much more like the riff that we began the share with as opposed to Rashi. And that's a point that the Ramban makes. If it's Alochan Ohel, so then 10 tefachim is not necessarily the size of Ohel. You could have an Ohel of one tefach, like we mentioned for Tumah. But if it's Alochan of Sukkah, Tachas HaSukkah, pardon me, it's Alochan of a Sukkah under a Sukkah, so we understand Shmuel's position that it has to be that the bed is 10 tefachim tall. The bed is not 10 tefachim tall. It is not considered a sukkah, tachas a sukkah. That's the way the din works. But Taisus notes that even according to the other authorities who say that sukkah, tachas a sukkah can be one tefach or four tefachim, Taisus writes, le'idach amoroi, here I'll scroll up to the top of the page, the top of the Taisus on the right column. According to other opinions, it would seem like it's considered a tent, even if it's not tent fachim. But v'shema mita shayni. It's entirely possible, Tosa suggests, that the discussion on Daf Yud about whether one tefach or four tefachim or ten tefachim, that's only relevant for a sukkah under a sukkah, because both are the same status. But when I have a bed under the sukkah, by definition, the bed is less permanent, less fixed than the sukkah. The sukkah is a structure. The bed is something I move from here to there and yonder and hither, right? I move that bed all over the place. It's a less substantial structure. If that's the case, if the bed is less substantial, then I understand why the bed requires 10 tefachim, even though everything else requires one tefach, perhaps. That's what Tosis comments, and okay, very good. So let's just review. If I sleep under a bed in the sukkah, I don't get the mitzvah. And we just said that the bed has to be 10 tefachim tall, meaning even, Taisa says, even if you hold that a sukkah under a sukkah can be 4 tefachim or 1 tefach, but the bed, which is less substantial, has to be 10. Let's just go back to the Mishnah. Right? Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah said, he's apparently responding to the Chachamim. He says, did you see my servant Tevi? Tevi is such a Talmud Chacham, he sleeps under the bed in the sukkah because he knows that avodim are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. That's what Rabbi Gamliel said. Zok Taisus, let's learn this Taisus together. Re'isim tevi avdi shu tamid chacham. So Tosfos comments, Eved Kosher Haya Kediisum Perek Sheni Debrachas, that Tevi was a kosher, a very fine and upstanding Eved, like the Gemara Bracha says. Ubi Rishami Tani Shahaya Meniach Tfilin, Velo Michu Biyodo Chachamim. Yerushalmi says that Tevi used to wear tefillin, and the rabbis never protested. Tevi wore tefillin, the rabbis never protested. Now let's just give a teeny bit of background. This Eved, who is an Eved Kanaini, a non-Jewish slave that's purchased by Jews. By the way, my father collects old Sfarim, so he has a sitter at home that has the bracha. It was actually an American published sitter. It has the bracha that one recites when you purchase a slave. There are such brachos. Most of us have not said it. But there are brachos that you recite when you purchase a slave. Okay. So here's the thing. A slave, an Eved, who went through Tevila Rishona, that slave who already immersed in the mikveh one time, has the halachic status of a Jew, and is obligated in mitzvos to the same extent that women are obligated in mitzvos. Meaning an Eved is obligated in all mitzvos, which are not time-bound positive mitzvos. Women are exempted from mitzvos aseh shehazman grema, from time-bound positive mitzvos. Mitzvos like lulav, shofar, tefillin, women are exempted from those mitzvos because of mitzvos aseh shehazman grema. Eved, similarly, is exempted from these mitzvos. The Yerushalmi says that Tevi, this righteous slave of Rabbi Gamliel, Tevi haya meniach tefillin, v'lo michu biyodo chachamim. No one protested. Everyone said, okay, he wears tefillin. Uparach, the Gemara asks, machlofa shitasid Rabbi Gamliel, d'ahacha gabi suka, michu biyodo chachamim, Mileshev Basuka. Share Haya Yoshein Tachas Hamita. Correct the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi asks a question. They allow Tevi to wear tefillin, but no one protested. Excuse me, no one protested when Tevi wore tefillin. However, they did not allow Tevi to sleep in the sukkah. Right? They say that Tevi has to be under the bed in the sukkah. He does not sleep in the sukkah. So the question is, why is it that the Chachamim did not want Tevi to be in the sukkah? Why is it that Michu biyado Chachamim, they told him not to be in the sukkah? The Maharsha comments over here that Michu doesn't mean that they really protest in the sense of don't do it. It means that they gently say, they discourage him from being in the sukkah. So how come Tevi is discouraged from being in the sukkah, but he's not discouraged from wearing tefillin? After all, right, they're both the same. They're both mitzvahs aseh shehazman grema. If you discourage him from being in the sukkah, you should also discourage him from wearing tefillin. So Tosfos quotes that the Yerushalmi answers, Umishani, Shaya osakein, Shlo lidchok es hachachonim, Shaya yeshenim besukkah. Tevi, they would not have protested Tevi sleeping in the sukkah, but there was a limited space in the sukkah. And they didn't want Tevi, the slave, to push the Chachamim out. The Chachamim are sleeping in the sukkah. If Tevi's going to be there, he'll take up space. So therefore they say, Tevi, don't sleep in the sukkah. But Tevi slept under the bed. Now, if that's the case, the Yerushalmi asks, one second, if the reason why Tevi is not in the sukkah is shel lidchok es hachachomim, so the Yerushalmi asks, yeshev lo chutz l'sukkah, so let him be outside of the sukkah. Why is he in the sukkah, under the bed? Let him get himself a good night's sleep. Stay outside the sukkah. Be much more comfortable. How come he's under the bed inside the sukkah? Umishani, the Yerushalmi answers, "Derota hayu l'shmoa divrei chachamim." That Tevi wanted to be in the sukkah in order to hear the conversations of the Talmidei Chachamim. The Talmidei Chachamim were in the sukkah. Tevi wanted to hear their conversations. That's why he wanted to be in the sukkah. Excuse me, wanted to be in the sukkah, even though it was much less comfortable, rather than being outside of the sukkah, because he wanted to hear the conversations of the chachamim. That's Tosis. Now, this Yerushalmi that Tosis quotes is discussed in all of the Rishonim. Again, the Yerushalmi is bothered by your question. How come Noah batted an eyelash when Tevi wore its tefillin, but they don't want Tevi to be in the sukkah? That's Yerushalmi's question. And the Yerushalmi gives a practical answer. They don't want Tevi to be in the sukkah just because there's a lack of space. That's really the Yerushalmi. But all the Rishonim are bothered by a question. How can you compare the mitzvah of sukkah to the mitzvah of tefillin? You see, there are some mitzvahs that if you do the mitzvah when you're not obligated, there could be something wrong. You could be doing something wrong. There are other mitzvahs that if you're not obligated and you do it, there's no problem. For example, the Gemara in Chagiga has a discussion whether Nashim Somchos Rishos and Nashim Somchos not Rishos. Right? When you bring a carbon, so the halacha is you have to put your hands on the animal and you press down on the animal's head and you recite Vidui. You recite the confession when you're pressing down on the animal's head. Are women allowed to do that? Well, there's a problem. The problem is that if you're not obligated to do that, and you do it, you are using kudshim improperly. You have to remember, this animal is hektish. The animal is the property of the Beis HaMikdash. If I put too much weight on the animal, I'm using kudshim. I'm not supposed to do that. So the Gemara says that only there's a machlokes whether Noshim Semches Rishus and Noshim not Semches Rishus. According to the opinion that it's not optional for women to lean on the carbon, so they should not do it because they would be using Kedusha, they'd be using Hekdish improperly. Similarly, there are other mitzvos where it's not neutral. There are other mitzvahs that if you're not obligated, you should not do. And one of those mitzvahs, the Ran over here says, is the mitzvah of tefillin. Tefillin have very high kedusha. If you're not obligated in tefillin, so putting on the tefillin could be, and the Ran's expression was like this, it could be zilzol in the kedusha of the tefillin. It could be a degradation, an insult to the kedusha of tefillin. Based on this, the Ran has a question. He says, I don't understand. How can the Yerushalmi compare the case of not protesting Tevi when he wore tefillin with the case of Tevi not sleeping in the sukkah? The cases are totally different. Tefillin is something that you're not supposed to do unless you're really obligated. Sukkah you can do if you want to. So the cases are not comparable. That's the question that the Ran asks, the Ritva asks, everybody asks this question. So many of the Rishonim say basically it's a kol shekein. The question the Rishonim is asking is, one second, if they don't protest when Tevi wears tefillin, even though wearing tefillin, if you're not obligated to do so, is wrong, because it's a zilzal, it's degrading to the kedusha of tefillin. So if that's the case, certainly they should not have protested when Tevi slept on, when Tevi would be in the sukkah. If they're not going to protest the tefillin, certainly they should not protest the what's it called? They should not protest the sukkah. So the question is a kol shekein. That's the way all the Rishonim say it. So the Ran presents it this way, but the Ran has one line where he presents it a tiny bit different. The way I just said it was the way the Ritva says it, and the second explanation the Ran says it as well. But the first explanation the Ran says that the logic is that they should have protested Tevi, both in the case of Tefillin and in the case of Sukkah, because if you're not obligated to do it, how can you go and make a bracha? You sit in the sukkah, you make a bracha. Asher kinchum etzasav etzivanu, leishev basukkah. You put on tefillin, you make a bracha. Asher kinchum etzasav etzivanu, lahaniach tefillin. If the chachomim did not protest Tevi when he wore tefillin, that means that they're not worried about the fact that he made a bracha, which might be not proper. Think about it. There's no obligation to wear tefillin. Women have no obligation to wear tefillin. Slaves, avodim, have no obligation to wear tefillin. If you have no obligation, are you allowed to make a bracha? Logic would say you can't. So the Ran is understanding that the issue in the Yerushalmi is based on the question of a bracha. Now, when we take this apart, though, we end up in an interesting place. When women shake a lulav, women are exempt from lulav, correct? It's mitzvah saseh shez man grama. Women are exempt from shofar. When a woman shakes a lulav, right? We could ask the women on the Zoom call, did they make a bracha? Do you make a bracha on the tilas lulav? Of course, right? Ashkenazi women make a bracha on all mitzvahs of seishah zman grama. Right? Rabbeinu Tam tells us because they are including themselves in the category of those who are obligated. When they decide, they don't have to shake a lulav. But when they decide, when the woman decides to shake a lulav, she's placing herself in the category of those who make a bracha and those who are obligated. You get the impression from the Ran's presentation that when an Eved would do a mitzvah, the Eved would also recite a bracha. When an Eved shakes lulav, when an Eved puts on tefillin, Avodim are obligated in mitzvahs the same as women, and the way the Ran presents it, an Eved would make a bracha the same way that according to Ashkenazi women, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we recite a bracha. Eino mitzuva va'osa, but when you do it, women recite a bracha on shofar, on lulav, etc. Right? On all mitzvahs of seisha as man grama, they recite a bracha. Rav Soloveitchik was not of this opinion. The Rav felt that women recite brachos when they shake lulav, when they hear shofar. Actually, a couple of years ago, my daughter missed davening on Rosh Hashanah, and I brought her to Breuer's to the later tekiah shofar in the afternoon. So when they about to blow the shofar, so they asked, is there anyone here who didn't hear shofar this morning? So, and who wants to make a bracha. So my daughter is not at all embarrassed. So she makes a bracha for all of the people in Breuer's nice and loud. It was like one of my great proud moments that my daughter is making a bracha on Tekiah Shofar and Breuer's. Okay, what can we do? It's a great moment. Now, women recite brachos. And it's a cessation as man grama. We are obligated in the mitzvah. Now, Soloveitchik explained that women are full-fledged Jews. They're part of Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the mitzvah of tzitzis, tefillin, lulav to men, to women. He gives it to all Jews. Women are obligated in all the mitzvahs. They don't have to do it. But if they do it, they recite a bracha. However, the Rav used to say the avodim are not obligated with an exemption from mitzvahs. Avodim are not full-fledged Jews who are exempt, that they don't have to do shofar, tzitzis, etc. Avodim are partial Jews. And therefore, the Rav used to say, he said this countless times in his shiurim, that avodim, when they do a mitzvah, do not recite a bracha, because they lack full kedushas Yisrael. A woman could say she could shumba sasavitzivani because a woman is part of Klal Yisrael. There's no shaila, of course. Like, what's there to talk about? You don't have to do, women don't have to do shofar. They don't have to shake a lulav. But when they do it, they say, Hashem shum tzavitzivani, Hashem, right, was mekadish us, Hashem sanctified us, right? We're part of Klal Yisrael, but in Eved not. That's what the Rav said. It's interesting that this Ran over here disagrees. The Prima Gadim points this out, and the footnotes in the Taisus HaRosh over here point this out, that the Ran over here seems to be saying that an Eved recites a bracha when the Eved does mitzvah saseh, as mangroma. That's already a big chiddush. This issue might depend on an idea that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. If you remember, we noted that the Eved, when a Jew purchases an Eved and recites the bracha that's found in the Od Sidurim on Knias Avodim, so you immerse the Eved in the mikveh, that's called Tevila Rishona. Then you immerse the Eved in the mikveh a second time after the Eved is freed, that's called Tevila Shnia. There's a discussion, Machlokes Rambam and the Muki Yosef. Reb Chaim has an essay about this. There's a discussion whether Tevila Shnia is a Din D'oraisa or Din D'rabbanan. That Machlokes is probably exactly this issue. If you hold Tevila Shnia, if you hold that immersing the Eved in the mikveh the second time is a Din D'oraisa, that means that the Eved is not fully Jewish until he goes to the mikveh the second time. That means, like what Rav Soloveitchik said, that the Eved can't recite Asher Kshom Tzolso V'Tzivano on the Tilos Lulav, because the Eved is not Jewish. The Eved can't make the bracha. However, if you hold that Tevila Shnia is a din d'Rabbanon, that means that the Eved is fully Jewish after the Eved was immersed in the mikveh the first time. So then you would say that the Eved, like the Ran says, would be able to recite a bracha when the Eved performs mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Again, this is part of a very large conversation about the status of avodim. I find this stuff interesting. Okay, Chevre, any questions, any comments? Okay, so I'll just ask, again, we'll be sending out like some email survey about the timing for this year. So I'll just ask if people can respond. And again, I'm happy with whatever the consensus opinion is. And we should have a wonderful night. And everything should just be grand and glorious. Okay, any other comments? Okay, Chevra, thank you very much for coming to learn, and have a good night. Oh.